Peterborough, Ontario. And he likes sports, and he tracks all the sports figures. And when they go into a slump, he writes them a letter. I mean, everybody gets tons of letters when you're on the top, but when you go downhill, you're a pariah, nobody writes to you. So that's when he writes. And he's had all sorts of communications with these guys. And he says, you know, when you're at the top, everybody loves you. When you hit bottom, like, who loves you? Well, Jesus does. And he gives them the gospel. So it's not my burden. I mean, I don't even know who's in a slump or who's on top. I have no idea. But again, that's why there's such tremendous variety, isn't there, in the church. And I think the very obvious, there's an old couple out in, they're in Missouri. They are the funniest couple. I mean, this little old couple, they're so simple. And when they go to the grocery store and they see those tabloids, and it's like, oh no, Elizabeth has had another heart attack. Well, you know who Elizabeth is, do you? Like, what Elizabeth would be on with a heart attack? Huh?
Queen?
No. A movie star, an old fat movie star. She always shows up every once in a while. Elizabeth Taylor. Okay? So they have this thing. Elizabeth has a heart attack. And so this is like, oh dear Elizabeth, we'll have to send her a card. And they do. And they get the letters back. These old people send, dear Elizabeth, so sorry, we're praying for you, and all this kind of stuff. And they get, like, you know, and like they've got this room full of stuff, like, oh yeah, that when we wrote to Duke Wayne, yeah, the poor fellow, you know. So, and you know, we found out that his cleaning lady is a Christian, and she witnessed to him for years. Hmm. And the cleaning lady used to write to us and so on. This dear little old couple, you know, and they see the news in the tabloids, and they write these little cards and letters off to people. I mean, the Lord uses these simple folks, you know. It's just so thrilling to me to see how, if we would all just allow God to push us in the direction He's designed us for, we'd cover the countryside, we'd cover the territory, wouldn't we? There are people and they've got a burden for stock car races, or people for, you know, hockey players, or who knows what. But there's just enough variety among the people of God that if we were all doing our job, we'd cover the countryside. It's not impossible, you know. Like, what do you
suppose there are in North America? How many unsaved people would there be in North America? 250 million?
Sure.
About that, eh? 250 million lost people. Okay, suppose there were 1 million Christians. Would you suppose there are 1 million Christians in North America? Mm-hmm. So what's that? 250 per each. So 50 weeks into 250 people. So how many is that?
Five.
Okay. So if you talk to one person a day, took Saturday and Sunday off, talk to one person a day, each Christian, 1 million Christians, talk to one person a day, in 1 year, North America would be evangelized. Is that right? Are my numbers right? No, you know, we duplicated that, so we might have to, you know, do two or three a day, but it's not an impossible task. There was I forget this big black preacher that was in Los Angeles, but he said, before he was saved, I hope it was before he was saved, he worked for the Democratic Party. And he was in Dallas, and he said, you know what? The Democratic Party, we said, there are, I forget how many city blocks there were in Dallas. I say there are 25,000 city blocks in Dallas. Okay, surely there are 25,000 Democrats in the whole city of Dallas. So every committed Democrat gets one block. And on that block, they have to make sure that every person knows who the candidates are, is registered to vote, and has a ride to the polling booth. So that was their responsibility. And they covered the whole city of Dallas that way. So when he got to Los Angeles, and I forget how many city blocks there are in Los Angeles, but he figured them out, and he said, well, I forget how many thousand this was, but he said, surely we have that many Christians here. If every Christian would take one block and say, it's my responsibility to make sure that everybody on this block knows the gospel. Right? And I used to think about these, you know, these survey things. What if we produced a survey that said, we're going through the whole city, we're talking to everybody in the city, and we're trying to find a certain kind of person, and we're wondering if you're that person. The kind of person we're looking for is someone who never once has heard God's way of salvation. So we have a series of five questions here, and that will tell us whether you're one of those people or not. Okay? So then we go through the series of questions, and if they think, you know, works is the way of salvation or whatever, it's obvious they've never heard the message once. So we say, what we want to do is make sure that everybody, we think everybody should be able to make an informed decision about their future. And it may be that you have only certain parts to the puzzle. And we'd like you to make sure that you have all the pieces. All right? So it'll just take 2 minutes. And we're going to go through this very simply with you. And what I would like to see is a little flip chart. Point one, point two, point three. You know, yeah. Just go through. Point one, and here's a verse that teaches that. Point two, here's a verse that teaches that. And go through the little flip chart and make sure they understand the gospel. Any questions? Okay, good. Now, here's a little refresher, you know. And if they have heard the gospel, we say, you know, you're one of the privileged ones. You're favored, you know. And here's a little gift for you. So we have one gift for the person who's never heard the gospel, and we have another gift for the people who have heard the gospel. A little warning, right? If they've never received it. And if they're a Christian, we have a gift for them. We don't just say, oh, sorry, you don't get any gift, you're a Christian. But we have something for them. Why? Because Christendom is in total disarray. The issue of baptismal regeneration, the issue of a falling away doctrine, marital problems, church problems, all sorts of things, right? So we have a nice little gift for them. And say, so here's what we're doing. Pray for us. You want to get a little prayer update? You know, here, sign up for here, and so you go around. Now this is totally non-confrontational in that sense, isn't it? If we're saying we're just looking now, if you've heard the gospel, well, very good, congratulations, you're special. Not everybody has. There are lots of people that have never heard it once. So the question is, what are you doing with it? God's going to hold you accountable for that. You know it. These other people don't, but you do, right? So if we had that sort of a thing, we could go through block by block and cover that city. Now, there was an old man, Mr. Upton, in Minneapolis. When he was 67 years old, he retired from work. He started taking the bus, and he would go to a neighborhood, and he'd knock on doors. And at the end of the day, he'd get on the bus, and he'd go home again. And the next day, he'd get on the bus, and he'd drive to where he got off. Where he stopped the last week or the last day, and then he continued there. He covered the whole city of Minneapolis. Now this is knocking on doors. Covered the whole city of Minneapolis once, started a second time, then he started to fall, and his family said, we really think you ought to go into an old folks home. So they moved him to the old folks home, which was then in Spring Lake, Rest Haven Homes, then in Spring Lake, Michigan. When he got to that city, he covered all of Spring Lake, all of Muskegon, all of Grand Haven, after he got in the old folks home. Just persistence. Just sticking at it. See, we hear about a city like 250,000 people. Well, how many houses is that? Maybe, what? It was about three people per home, average. So all of a sudden, it's more doable, isn't it? Now, this is going to take money. Like, if you've got 250 million lost people at a dollar apiece, that's real money, isn't it? God's got lots of money. That's not the problem. The church has, I forget the number in here, how many billion, I think it's 22 billion a year that evangelicals are spending on churches, on building church buildings. Mm-hmm. 22 billion a year on church buildings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, there's lots of money out there. But again, having a strategy, when you read the book of Acts, they had a strategy. And sometimes the Lord nudged them. He bumped them. Not there right now. Go here, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. We're glad if the Lord does that. But they go methodically. You can mark it out on your map. Methodically they went. Paul covered 4 provinces in 5 years. That's like 4 states. Every city and town in that state in 5 years. And saw assemblies in all the major centers. Wow. You know, there's a series of books called That the World May Know. And one long paragraph in one of those books is the story of J.W. Clapham, who was a school teacher from New Zealand, flying to Britain for the summer. At that time, the British had just driven the Turks out of Palestine. So he thought, well, he'd stop and tour the land. So he gets out and he tours around Palestine, Israel, and he's towards the end of his trip. He's sitting up on Mount Carmel looking down over Haifa Bay, and he thinks to himself, there's not one New Testament assembly in the whole land where the church began. So he cabled back home and said, give my job to somebody else. He stayed for 5 years and he started the assembly in Jaffa, in Haifa, in Jerusalem. In 5 years. He went home, got married, came back, started the assembly in Damascus, Syria, Amman, Jordan, Nicosia, Cyprus, Istanbul, Turkey, and several in Egypt. Like, what are we doing with our time? Right? There were 6 guys that came over from Scotland in the late 1800s. In 30 years, they started 400 assemblies in North America. I mentioned Oliver Smith. Oliver Smith, farm boy from Northeast Iowa, started 26 assemblies. He preached for 365 days in the streets of Garneville, Iowa. Saw his first assembly started. Then he went to all the people, got lists of all their relatives. And he went to the relatives. Hello. Hi. I'm Oliver Smith. I want to tell you what happened to your Uncle Joe. Can I come in? What happened? let me sit down here for a minute. I want to tell you. And you tell them how Uncle Joe got saved. And of course, if you tell somebody how somebody got saved, you can preach the gospel, right? Then I quoted this verse to them. You ever heard that verse before? Listen to this. Right? You understand what that means? Yeah, well, he got it. Here's what it means, right? Preach the gospel. He started 26 assemblies by visiting all these relatives. That's it. That's sheaves, isn't it? What? Yeah, let me know. There's one gulp. What? Lukewarm. Yeah, Laodicean Diet Coke. Nothing like that. So, I think it takes people with vision. You know what I like to see? Now, South Dakota. South Dakota has about 250,000 people. It's a breeze. My son David figured out if there were 10 young men that went out, how many summers it would take to visit every home in South Dakota. Now, of course, he's asking me to get him a couple of ATVs, you know. He says, that's the best. And you know, these farmhouses, you got to go from farmhouse to farmhouse. You got a couple of, you know, ATVs for the Lord.
Put a fish symbol on it.
Well, yeah, exactly. No. I get a you know, vinyl wrap on the thing. We might as well do it right. Sure. So, you know, if we were able to say, in 2 years, say, okay, South Dakota, that's one state done. Right? Okay, let's go to the next one. Even the next smallest state. And we work from one to the next until there's an army of people that are actually doing this. Now see this little assembly in Portage la Prairie, Manitoba, the people who came up with the Seed Sower Pact, this was their idea. Let's get John 3:16 into every home in Portage la Prairie. But they did it. Okay, how about Manitoba? They did it. Okay, how about Canada? Well, how about the world? They have set out, and they never charge a penny. I mean, if you ask them how much do they cost, well, they'll tell you. But they send them out, and province by province, state by state, their intention is to get John 3:16 into every home in the world. Man, I like that. Now, it's not my burden, it's not my vision, but it's theirs. I think it's a great one. Can't hurt, can it? So, there's a couple, Joe and Penny Clark. They've just moved to Great Falls, Montana. They would like to see two or three couples move to Great Falls, work with them, and then move to the next major population center. And they would like to keep doing this until there are groups of believers in every population center in Montana doing gospel work. Joe Clark was the heir to one of the largest auto dealerships in the United States. It's here in Pennsylvania. He walked into his dad's office one day and he said, "Dad, I sold enough cars for this lifetime." He turned his back on it, went out to do gospel work. I'm looking forward to the day when mothers long for their boys to be evangelists instead of engineers. Because, you know, that's what it's going to take. Billie Jean King said her first recollection was sitting on her mother's knee looking at a tennis magazine. It's the mothers who have the influence, you know. And I think if mothers long to see the day, I mean, you can be an engineer for Jesus. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is it doesn't seem there are too many mothers who want their sons to be evangelists. And I long to see the day when it starts to happen. Because what I'm finding is young men that want to grow to do gospel work, it's their elders who are saying, "Man, you better have a career. You better, you know, you better have something you can make some good money on, you know, and you better settle down and, you know, get a family and this and that and the other thing." Well, you know, all in the Lord's will, but I think we have to actually begin to think about what they call sacrifice, you know, and be willing to make the effort. I think we need to think about moving, like, for example, in South Dakota right now, in Sioux Falls, one of the most fruitful areas has been an area of mobile home parks. It's quite a nice mobile home park. The grass is cut. There are no wrecked cars lying around or anything. It's really quite nice. There are mobile home parks in there, mobile homes in there, that someone has moved out. Maybe they're being chased by the law or something, and they disappear overnight. And it's just sitting there. And it needs to be fixed up. They'll give it to you. Free of charge. You can move in, fix it up, pay the monthly, you know, ground fee. There are towns in North Dakota, they will give you a house if you'll move in. So, this idea that you've got to be, you know, $250,000 in debt to be a real American. So I think some people need to pioneer in a new kind of thinking that says, I would like to be able to work 20 hours a week to pay my bills and 40 hours a week in the work of God. Let's see if we can do it. Let's see if we can find a way to do that. I mean, if we had somebody who was burdened to wholesale groceries, to a bunch of people who are out doing pioneer work. It's a wholesale clothing or whatever it is you need. And just do what it costs. And if you didn't have a big mortgage, you probably could work on 20 hours a week, couldn't you? I don't know. All I'm saying is I think it'd be good to give it a try.
Yeah, that should be the goal at least. Otherwise, you'll never come near it.
Yeah.
I just realized the time. You probably are got a busy schedule. We don't want to keep you too late.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Appreciate you to share with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try to deal with encouragement. This is for us.
Well. And you know, again, when we talk about all these things, the scripture says, prove all things. Hold fast to what's good. Some of these ideas, they're not the will of God for you at all. But at least, you know, pass it through your brain, think about it, pray about it. The Lord gives you an opportunity to do something. I think that we're looking for young people that have capabilities in computers to go out there. We ought to have 1,000 websites, customized websites, to draw people to the gospel. I mean, we ought to have them now. There's a lady, she wanted to give her testimony on the internet. She knew there's no way anybody's going to look up her testimony. So she started a website, How to Straighten Curly Hair. She gets thousands of hits. And at the bottom, a little button, the most amazing thing that ever happened to me. Click. Right? You got to go fishing. You got to have bait. And what kind of idiot goes out fishing with a bare hook? That's what we're trying to do with gospel sites. Who goes looking for a gospel site? Right? So you have a site. Suppose you have a site with all good-looking cars, old classic cars. Nice, you know, get a photographer to go out there to these car shows, take a bunch of pictures, and just have a website full of these cars. Or beautiful flowers. Free. You can download any of these that you want. I mean, this brother, you know, this evangelism for the faint-hearted. When they went into Austria, they couldn't break into Austria, into the culture. Well, he took beautiful florals, beautiful pictures of flowers. And so he would put on a free presentation down at the local hotel. He'd rent a room, and he'd have this talk about flowers, all these exotic flowers, and all the flower clubs and people like that, they'd come. And then, at the very end, he'd say, I have another interest, too. I like to study the Bible. If anybody would like to study the Bible with me, such and such a night. These people would come in. He didn't know the language well enough to really know what they were saying, but he'd say, read this verse. And they'd read it. He'd say, what do you think it means? And they'd say something. He didn't know if they were saying it right or not. That didn't matter. What mattered was they were reading the Bible and actually running it through their brain. So then he'd say, well, what's the next verse say? They read that. What do you think that means? And they'd he figured sooner or later the Spirit of God would show him what it meant, right? So he couldn't even communicate at that point with them, but he just let them keep reading and running it through their brains. What did they start? 3 or 4 assemblies there. So, you know, if we had some websites, that a website on who knows what, websites on 1,000 different topics, but websites that led people into the gospel. Like people look at these websites with pictures of stars, right? What an ideal thing to talk about God. Don't start with that. Get them into the site, and then get them to the gospel. It doesn't cost much to get them up there, if somebody's got some ability, right? Web blogs. Who does web blogs with the gospel? I don't know. I mean, everybody's doing web blogs. Or people who have the courage to try and break into the countries that block out Christian sites. There's no way they can block them all. Right?
For example, you could have a website on water and in there talk about the water of life. Are you thirsty for something more? Right? Or the way. How can you block out words like the way? You can't do it. Well, see, they're always trolling. They're looking for Christian sites, then they block them. So there needs to be somebody who's getting into North Korea, getting into Nepal, getting into these places where university students and professors can have access to the computers. Yemen, right? And spend a little bit of time every day trying to break into these countries with the gospel. My niece learned Hebrew so she could witness to Jews in Israel. She'd come home at night, she'd sit there and witness to Jews. Sitting in Ontario, you know. She got talking to a guy one night, and he said, are you Jewish? And she said, no, but my best friend is a Jew. And he says, you write about him as if it was in the past tense. She said, yes, he died. Oh, I'm sorry, how did it happen? He was murdered. Murdered? Where? Just outside of Jerusalem. Really? When did it happen? 2,000 years ago. Are you crazy? He said, no. Aren't you interested in your own Messiah? He said, not really. End of conversation. A few days later, he comes looking for her. He says, okay, give it your best shot. So all I'm saying is, we have never in our lives had more possibilities, more opportunities than we have today. But we are so busy with so much stuff, busy stuff, that doesn't mean a snap of the fingers. Mm. So all I'm saying is, find, say, 4 hours Sunday afternoon. Okay, that's my time, right? That's what I'm going to do. And utilize that to try and break in. Start thinking outside the box. Start breaking some of these barriers. We say, well, you just can't do it. There's got to be a way. So, there we are. I think I'm so heartened, so encouraged by what I see in so many places. People that say, I'm going to make the best honey. I'm going to have some beehives, make the best honey I can. I'm going to go to this market, this fair, and I'm going to have the best price and the best honey and the best news. People come by, that's what I'm there for. I think it's great. They'll reach more people with the gospel than your local gospel meeting will in a year. Mm. But you're there where the people are. Anyway, the other thing I think we need is a clearinghouse for stories. Now, it would be tough because you get some phony stories, you get some urban legends coming in. But
up until now, it's been you, brother. Clearing house for sure.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But there are, like, in every place, like, for example, all right, here I'm at Greenwood Hills, here are all these people, every one of them has a thriller. If you just know where to ask, how to go, everyone's a thriller. There's a Jewish lady there. And she doesn't believe in God at all. She becomes an alcoholic. She goes to the 12-step thing, and out of that she got the idea there is a God who cares. That's all she got. But then the next stage is, you know, she meets some person who gets her to go to church, and at least there she opens the Bible. The person isn't really teaching the Bible, but she at least starts reading the Bible. And then step by step, eventually she ends up in the assembly, and she's so excited, she's so thrilled, you know. This Jewish woman, I mean, it's amazing to see how God reached her. There's another guy up there. His granny, 92 years old, in palliative care, slipping into dementia. He's the only one saved in the family. He goes to talk to her. Click. She recognizes him. And he shares the gospel with her. Talks to her about her sin. And then click, she's gone. Comes back a few days later. She's hanging on to the bars of her bed, the rails of her bed. He says, I need help. So he goes out and calls the nurse. The nurse comes in, checks everything. I don't know, she keeps saying this. I don't know, it must be just her dementia. Sorry, but we can't help her. So she goes back. So it comes back and she says, I need help. He says, what kind of help do you need? I need help with my sins. Now this is a proud, church-going woman who would never acknowledge she was a sinner. Okay? For days she's been doing this. I need help. What help? I need help with my sins. So he opens the scripture, he reads her some scriptures, she looks up and says, Lord Jesus, please forgive me. Anyway, the nurses start talking. They call up his mother and say, something went on in the room, we don't know what it was. But the woman is so calm now. She was so agitated, she's so calm, we don't know what it was. So she calls the unsaved mother, calls her son now and says, what did you do to Grandma? Well, he explains what happened, you know. So when the funeral, she dies 2 weeks later. And when the funeral comes, the family says, well, I suppose you want to say something. Well, yeah, I do. Well, don't say anything about what happened in the hospital, you know. I'm sorry. This is the best news in the world, you know. And here are all her old friends sitting there, all these religious people who all think they're good enough to get to heaven. And he gets up and tells how this dear old lady in her dying days said, I need help. I need help with my sin. And how she discovered there was forgiveness with God. You know, I think that is a thriller, isn't it? 92, the old devil licking his chops, thinking, here comes one. A plucked like a brand from the burning. A week later, she was dead. Right? Those are great stories. There are all kinds of them around. Out in Claremont, there's one last story. Do you know the story about Ray Lynch? Have I told you that story? Yeah, you know the story of Ray Lynch. Yeah. Who else knows the story of Ray Lynch? All right.
Yeah, they're from Claremont. You know that.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Ray Lynch. A professor at Whittier College in California. Professor of journalism. His wife leaves him. He broods about it, finally comes up with a harebrained scheme. He's going to kidnap her and take her up to a cabin in the mountains and keep her there so she agrees to live with him. So on the way to kidnap her, he's driving through Whittier. You know, the Nixon family, Richard Nixon's family, came from Whittier. And his brother had a restaurant right on the main drag, Nixon's restaurant. He's driving along through Whittier, sees a sandwich board out in front, Christian businessman, and some title of the topic that day, which intrigued him. And just on a venture, he pulled in. So he goes in, and they announce, sorry, the speaker didn't come. So we're going to give our testimony. So around the circle they go, telling their stories. They come to Ray, he thinks, I better say something. He gets up and starts talking about his church activities and stuff. Suddenly he breaks down weeping and says, it's all a hoax. I was on my way to kidnap my wife. Did you ever hear this part of the story?
No.
You never heard this part of the story? All right. This is the real stuff, man. Okay, so somebody gives him a copy of John R. Rice's booklet, What Must I Do to Be Saved? He takes it back home. The next day, he gets saved. Well, his job in journalism is, if anybody gets a touchdown in football, if anybody gets a book published or sings an aria or whatever, he gets them to tell the story. He writes an article, sends it to their hometown newspaper. Okay, so everybody in the campus eventually has to come to Ray. So everybody who comes, he gives them the gospel. So the dean hears about this. He comes in and says, Ray, you can't do this, man. He says, I got to do it. Jesus changed my life. He says, well, obviously, Jesus is your new boss, so you better ask him what you're going to do with the rest of your life, because you're not going to do that here. Thinking it would scare Ray off and he'd stop witnessing. But the next day, the dean sticks his head in the office and hears Ray cleaning out his desk. What are you doing, man? Well, you said to ask Jesus what to do with the rest of my life. So I asked him and he told me. What did he tell you? Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. His wife never came back to him. Ray Lynch has preached the gospel in every country of the world. He just got back from Montenegro, the last formed country in the world. He's preached in North Korea, he's preached in Yemen, he's preached in... He spent quite a bit of time preaching in all the villages of Galilee. Preached all over the world. So,
Boy, when the team was there, you couldn't believe it. He was like a kid. He was up there every day, just so eager with the gospel, you know. Anyway, so I said to Ray, tell the team a really good story, something that happened to you that was really thrilling. He says, well, I'll tell you a story that'll prove to you that there's a God in heaven. That sounds like a good one. I said, well, I was in an all-night prayer meeting for the Muslim world. And I had heard that the head man in the Muslim world was the Prince of Mecca. And so I asked, Lord, please send someone to take the gospel to the Prince of Mecca. And if you want to use me, that's fine. I know it could cost my life, but I'm willing to go. So, he was in Malta, and he thought, I'll go, this was three months later, he was in Malta, he thought, I'll cross over to Tunisia, go to the Saudi embassy, and see if I can get permission to go into Saudi Arabia. So he goes to the embassy, and they say, sorry, we don't need tourists, we got lots of oil money, we only give visas to people who are invited into Saudi Arabia by a Saudi of influence, of significance. So they reject his request. So he thinks, well, I'll take a Shirouk taxi across the desert, I'll try again in Cairo. So they're traveling across the desert. I mean, the desert out there is desert. There's nothing out there. Traveling across the desert, and they come to this watering hole. They go off the road to this watering hole, and they're sitting by the watering hole, and all of a sudden they see this guy on a big motorcycle, big saddlebags, flying across the desert. And he sees them, and he comes pulling over to them, and he says, can you tell me how to get back on the highway? Sure, yeah, we're going back up to the highway in a few minutes, just wait. So he sits down beside Ray, and they get talking. And Ray says, where are you from? He says, well, I'm from Saudi Arabia. I'd like to go to Saudi Arabia. I was just in the Saudi embassy, and they told me that I had to have an invitation from a person of significance in Saudi Arabia to get in. And the fellow said, well, I'll write you a letter. I said, well, who are you? Well, I'm the son of the chief of security for the Prince of Mecca. Okay, now just get the scene there. We're in the middle of the desert. Right? So he's just sitting in the desert floor, and he writes this letter. Gives it to Ray. So they take off, go up to the highway. Way goes the guy on a motorcycle. So Ray gets to Cairo, he goes to the Saudi embassy, shows the letter, and he gets his visa. Then he goes out and he buys a presentation Bible in Arabic. Nice olive wood covers, gilt edges. He has no idea how he's going to get it into Saudi Arabia. Right? So he goes down to the water, down to the boat to travel across to Saudi Arabia, and here's the guy on the motorcycle on the boat. And he says, my apologies, I should have invited you to come and stay at my house. You can travel with me. Right? So they get to the border, don't even look in his bags. He just goes through with the chief of security's son. And they travel to Jeddah. During the Feast of Ramadan, the Fast of Ramadan, and the Prince of Mecca is in Jeddah. So he's welcomed into the house, treated royally. Welcomed into the house of the chief of security. Of course, the chief of security doesn't have a clue what the man's doing. So the next day, he goes for a little walk with a little package, you see, and goes off down to the palace. But when he gets to the palace, the guards there say, oh, the Prince of Mecca doesn't stay in the palace during Ramadan. So your pass into the palace isn't going to work. You'll have to get another pass. We'll write you a pass here to get into he stays in this big tent city, you know, these fancy tents. Well, of course, Ray didn't have a pass to get into the palace, but now he has a pass to get into the tent. So he goes down to where these tents are, and as he's walking, he gets past the security, as he's walking toward the tent where the Prince of Mecca is, like, doesn't this excite you just a little bit? This man walks up to him, speaks to him in English, and says, what are you doing here? He says, well, I'm here to see the Prince of Mecca. Do you speak Arabic? No. He only speaks Arabic. But he said, I'm the translator for the ambassador, so I'll translate for him. So They walk into this room, they're introduced, and here are all these imams sitting, right? And the Prince of Mecca at the head. Their long gowns, their long beards are all sitting there. See? So he's introduced, he opens up the package, and he hands the Bible. Okay, this is during the fast of Ramadan. Right? In Mecca, no non-Muslims would be allowed there. They'd stone them to death if they dared try to go there. Right? So here he is, the Prince of Mecca, top man in the Muslim world, the month of Ramadan, he's handing him a Bible. The Prince of Mecca says, I don't understand why you do this. Throw your life away like this? You're not going to survive the day. And so Ray Lynch tells him the story of how the Lord saved him. This is why I've come, because the Lord has saved me, he's changed my life. And I've been praying for you. And God opened the door for me to bring his word to you. The Prince says, I still don't understand it. Why would you sacrifice your life for this? And Ray Lynch said, well, suppose you had cancer, and I was the only one in the world who knew the cure to cancer. What would you call it if I wouldn't tell you? Well, that would be wicked. Well, you have a worse disease than cancer. Cancer will kill your body, but sin will damn your soul. And I have the answer, and I've come to bring the answer to you. For 30 minutes, Ray Lynch explained the gospel, and he said it was like everybody was in suspended animation. Nobody moved. Nobody moved a whisker. And he preached the whole gospel, and when he was finished, he turned and walked out. Nobody lifted a finger. Nobody said a word. He went back to the house, back to the chief of security's house. By that time, he said, I'd outlived my welcome. And he packed up, and the fellow on the motorcycle and his brother, younger brother, took him out to the main road where he was going to catch the bus out of Saudi Arabia. And they're sitting by the roadside watching the sunset, having coffee, and the fellow on the motorcycle says to Ray, you know, I went to university in the West last year, and I ended up in a dorm with a Christian, and he really shook my faith in Islam. And so to forget all that, I went on a wild party spree. And I visited all these nightclubs all through Europe and North Africa. And he said, I came to the last leg of the journey, and you took up where he left off. Wow. Ray says, I don't know whether he got saved that day, but I think his younger brother did. I have no idea what happened with that Bible and the Prince of Mecca. I just know this, that God is not willing that any should perish. And if we have a heart to see the Prince of Mecca get the gospel, God will open the doors to do it, right? There is no door that God can't open. So, I could tell you lots more stories, but there you go. These are real stories. There's Ray Lynch is sitting down there in the old folks' home, you know, if you want to go and see him. You could sit there beside him and ask him to tell you 1,000 stories like that. He was in Israel. And he got beaten up and thrown into jail with his translator. And the translator was soon to get married and didn't think this was a very good career path. He said he was going to quit. So when he left, Ray was let out of prison. He said, I don't want to do this in the energy of the flesh. So I need an extension on my visa, so I'm going to go down there and I'm going to come clean with these boys. So he went down to the Israeli offices, and when he filled out the form, occupation, a preacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Reason for visa, to share the good news with everyone in Israel, how Christ died for their sins according to the scripture, was buried and rose again the third day according to the scripture. So the immigration official looks at this document, totally shocked, goes over to an Orthodox Jew sitting in the office, shows it to him. The Orthodox Jew throws back his head, laughs hilariously, and says, sir, you're probably the first person who ever told the truth on that document. 1 year extension. Okay, now I'll go home.